Welcome once again to Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
All right, Mike, since the last time we got together, a lot of stuff has happened. Let's just get right into it. We'll talk about free agency. That was the big sort of noteworthy event of the past couple of weeks. Let's get into the standard question, the winners and losers. Who do you like? Who do you think came out of free agency better than they went in?
I really like Winnipeg. They last year they had a lot of weaknesses, but especially at O-line, and they really tightened it up. The Stanley Bryant, Mark Dial, you know, they're just going to give Willie some more time, and that's going to make them a lot better next year. And I think with their improvements, they could win a couple more games and maybe even be a playoff team. So I'm really impressed with what Winnipeg has done thus far.
I think Winnipeg can be a playoff team as well. I'm going to go with Ottawa. They needed help essentially everywhere. They loaded up on wide receivers. That's both a positive and a negative. They paid for a lot of potential, but not a lot of actual output that's already occurred. So that could either be something that elevates them to a possible third place team. I don't think they can. I still think Hamilton and Montreal are the two best teams in the division, but I think they could, if Burris is back to 2012-2013 form, with all those weapons, Ellingson, Jackson, the trade for Mo Price that we've talked about on previous episodes, Sinopoli, if he continues to develop, I think that's a really good receiving core. Obviously, Winnipeg and Ottawa are the two teams that did the most because they had the most to spend. They also were the two worst teams last year, so they need to make the most improvements. And I think they both did well in free agency. I'm going to side just slightly with the Red Blacks.
What do you think of Desjardins as a GM? He seems to, you know, overload maybe a bit. You know, they needed receivers, but did they have to go get like 17 of them?
Yeah, good point. Probably not. But it seemed like receiver was the big that was the marquee position this year. There were no huge quarterbacks available. Running back was really a very soft market. They didn't score touchdowns last year.
Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of that was on a very inexperienced receiving core. They had Marcus Henry, they had Matt Carter, and Matt Carter's no one's number one Canadian receiver.
No. He's okay.
Yeah, he's okay. He's a solid hand. He's a guy that can get you a couple hundred yards, maybe a touchdown or two. They needed to upgrade that receiving core. It might seem like overkill, but is there really such thing as having too many good receivers?
Good point.
I do agree with you that Winnipeg, though, they made the solid moves. Their big problem last year was protecting Willie. So what did they do? They went out and they signed probably the best left tackle available in Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
Brought in a pretty solid player in Dial, who will probably not be anointed the starter, but would be given a chance to compete for the job. I wasn't a huge fan of his when he was in Hamilton, but he wasn't a terrible player.
They also brought in Picard too, right? Earlier on.
Oh yes, they did when he was cut in Saskatchewan. Like that's the makings of a pretty decent offensive line. If Willie can get more protection, find those receivers, Clarence Denmark, guys like that, I think they can really really make a run. Now your losers in free agency. I'm pretty sure we're gonna probably pick the same team here. Who do you got?
I got Toronto.
Yeah, same here.
To a lesser extent, BC, but I don't know if they belong in that category. But Toronto just seems to be not doing anything. I mean, they're just, in my opinion, they seem like a dormant franchise until Braley sells the team. And, you know, it's a sad state of affairs right now in Toronto, but hopefully there's some light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, Maybe they've done more than I think, but the only name that pops out that they have signed is they re-signed Curtis Steele. Good player. But I would think if they were looking at running backs, I'm surprised they didn't kick Nick Grigsby's tires. I think we talked about this on the last podcast when we were discussing the run into free agency, who might go where. I think I mentioned that. I saw Grigsby as a great fit in Toronto. He's a downhill runner. He can catch out of the backfield.
Good blocker.
Yeah, he was the best running back in the entire free agency pool. So I was really surprised that Toronto would opt to bring Steele in. Maybe it's because he knows the offense. They're comfortable with him. It probably comes cheaper, I would imagine. Grigsby was an all-star last year. I don't know. Toronto to me looks like, as much as I liked what Ottawa did in order to move themselves up, I think they also are helped by the fact that Toronto has done absolutely nothing.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of them next year, but you never know if they come back. They could come back strong. I mean, Barker seems to be able to find talent that we've never heard of before and bring them in, and they do really well up here. So we shall see.
Well, here's the thing. As long as they have Ricky Ray, they're still going to be in every game. Like, they finished 8-10 last year, and that was an overachievement. They had no receivers for most of the year. They had to bring Maurice Mann out of retirement.
Yeah.
Because they lost so many guys, and they still were in the final week of the season in the playoff hunt. So, yeah, I'm not going to count them out, obviously.
No.
Ricky Ray is still, as far as I'm concerned, the best quarterback in the game. So, yeah, there's still obviously a chance that they could perhaps overachieve again next year. I just think all the teams around them have gotten better. Ottawa's not going to be a two-win team next year.
No way.
And Toronto is one of the teams Ottawa beat.
Exactly.
So I don't know. The Argos just look. If we were to make predictions right now, I would peg them as probably last place in the East going into this season.
Oh wow, that would be a. I hate to see their attendance if they only won a couple games this year.
But, yeah, it's.
Hey, that's another issue on itself.
Yeah. We could talk about that another time, perhaps.
Yeah, yeah.
Were there any players left that you're surprised are still on the market?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I'd have to look that up. Do you have anybody that might jog my memory?
I'm a little surprised that Dan Lefevre
yes,
is still
yes.
kind of looking for work. Mostly just because he's a solid player. He's a young quarterback. I think these teams like an Ottawa or maybe even a BC with maybe some questions at quarterback, Lule's health and Burris's age, of course. I'm surprised that they haven't brought him in. One of them haven't brought him in just because he could, after seeing what he did last year with Hamilton, he could be a future franchise quarterback. I know people question whether or not he'll ever come back from the knee injury, and that's a valid question. And I know that there's always been questions about his arm strength. But I went back and looked at some of the games he played in, and he didn't seem to have a problem throwing the deep ball. I'm just surprised he's still out there. Maybe the market just isn't there for a backup quarterback. I don't know.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, you think of players, you like a player, and then they just don't get picked up. You know what I mean? And like, I really like Lefevre. I thought he came in and did a great job, even though we lost almost every game. I think we won one game when he was the starter, but yeah, I see a lot of potential in him, and I like the way he plays. He's a hard-nosed quarterback. He can run, and I think, you know, like you said, he gets a little grief for his arm strength, but I don't really see a big problem there. But I'm looking at the free agents here, and I'm kind of surprised that Aaron Kelly hasn't re-signed with Winnipeg. I really like Aaron Kelly. He used to be a Ticat, obviously, and I was kind of sad when he went. I wouldn't mind seeing him back in Hamilton. Do you like Aaron Kelly?
A big-bodied receiver. Yeah, I think he's a good player. He had a pretty decent season in Winnipeg last year, especially early on in the season. He kind of tailed off at the end, if I recall correctly. But Yeah, I guess him being out there is still a little surprise. Obviously, Bakari Grant still being out there is kind of a surprise to me too. Like these are big clutch receivers, guys who catch the ball in traffic.
Nick Lewis.
Nick Lewis. Completely forgot about him. That is his must just be age.
Yeah, it
That like
must
it's
be.
got to be a thing where teams just look at him. He's 32, 33, he's getting up there, and they just don't want to take the chance on him. He's coming off a really down year after having the injury the year before. It is a bit of a surprise. Yeah, maybe Nick Lewis might be the biggest surprise still out there. Like again, a team like Ottawa, who was so receiver happy, they went and drafted and signed a bunch of potential. They could have probably brought in Lewis instead of one of those guys. Now maybe they want to build the receiving core up for when the older players like Burris leaves, but Lewis can be an asset to any team that wants to take a chance on him.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who could be the or where could be the potential landing spot for him, but
Why not Toronto?
yeah, that could work. Ricky Ray to Nick Lewis, that'd be an interesting connection.
Look, they got Owens, who's the speed guy, the downfield threat. They got Dury, who can, who he's like a Swiss Army knife. He can do a lot of different things. He can catch, he can run. I'm a big Andre Dury fan.
Yeah, I like Dury too, you know, even though it's blasphemy to say that about an hour ago, but I do like him.
I think Lewis would be a perfect fit in Toronto. And I'm
Yeah.
actually surprised that they haven't maybe thought of bringing him in.
Yeah, maybe they've kicked the tires, but I haven't heard anything, and I just don't know if anyone really wants to sign in Toronto. Like, I don't know.
Well, that just said maybe they just can't sign. Like I don't. It does look like they're probably going to be going after a lot of like going through those tryout camps and those free agent camps and picking up guys through there. So yeah, maybe Toronto is just they just might not be interested. They're not a big free agent destination in the past anyway. Like the move to get Ray was a giant trade, and they have been known to do that from time to time. But when you look at past years, you don't really see many of the big name veteran free agents signing with the Argos. I just don't think that's the way that they operate.
No, I think, yeah, I think you're right. I think Barker has his own way of doing things, and he's not going to jump into free agency huge.
I think he trusts his talent evaluation when it comes to unknown players. They have had some success. Marcus Ball, no one knew who he was. Now he's playing in the NFL. Armstead, they had him for a season the year they won the Grey Cup, and then he went down. Like he does seem to find a way to replenish the talent on that team. Their rookie of the year last year, I can't pronounce his name. The defensive end.
Apagolago.
However it is pronounced, he again came out of nowhere, and I as much as it looks like Toronto's not doing much, as much as we said that they're the quote unquote losers of free agency, maybe we are kind of giving them short shrift here. Maybe we should not quite be so harsh with Toronto at this moment.
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen, so it's really hard to predict in the CFL, I'll tell you that much.
So the other big news of the past little while was they finally released the schedule, and they did it in the stupidest possible way. This 10,000 retweet nonsense that happened. At first I thought it was a little cute idea, and then it just became a disaster. It took hours for that thing to happen.
Oh, come on. A disaster? Really, Josh?
Yeah, disaster.
Oh, I disagree. Listen, maybe 10,000 was a little high. Yes. And listen, they were just trying to create some buzz. CFL's an easy target, you know. They do anything and everyone jumps all over them, and not you all the time, but
Look.
I mean the writers for the league, you know, they like to jump on the league. And I mean, listen, I think they were going to release it at a certain time anyways. Apparently they didn't even get to 10,000, but I don't know, like, come on, give them a break, Josh, come on.
Look. I understand the reasoning behind it. I just don't like the idea that we were essentially forced to sit and beg for them to finally put it out. There's a lot of people out there that the earlier this comes out, they can book their vacations from work. They can decide where they want to go for road games. Like,
yeah, but
this
it
is a
was
very
3 hours, dude.
Yeah, I understand. I understand it wasn't. It seemed ill planned. Maybe it was the number, the 10,000. Maybe they should have lowered the number. I don't know. It just seemed like it was a good idea that just went off the rails way too quickly. I just think that they could have built buzz by saying, by doing the same thing, and then maybe saying at noon we will release the schedule. But here's what we're going to do: the teams that get the higher votes will release that team schedule first. So, like, you know what I mean? It was all about who's going to win the next Grey Cup. All the fans are voting who's going to win the next Grey Cup. So, if BC fans accumulate the most votes, and the first schedule out, BC Lions, you get to post your schedule, and then so on and so forth through the nine teams over the course of a half an hour or so, and then the league releases the entire schedule as a whole and puts it out there. I think the idea was meant with good intentions. I just think the execution was poor.
I can agree with that. I mean, hopefully next year they'll do some tweaks and, you know, maybe not make it 10,000 tweets or do your idea. I liked your idea with the most team votes and all that. That was pretty cool. I guess I'm just on Twitter here, and Drew Edwards just tweeted out that by mid-April, the stadium should be done.
Okay, well, I've heard late June. I've heard August. I've heard November, maybe even October might have been thrown in there, September probably as well. I remember earlier this year, or late last year, it was beginning of January, and now we're hearing April. At some point, I guess it's got to be finished, but at this rate, this could be just like a running joke where it's, yeah, the stadium's going to be done in 2018. Like, it just seems like this is a never, ever ending story. And considering all the things that came about with the stadium, the debate about where it should be, this seems like a very interesting epilogue to the whole thing, where it's like, of course this is what happened, but yay April, so next year it will finally be done. It'll be ready for the start of the season. I guess that's great.
Yeah, it's quite the saga, I must say.
So sticking with the schedules, is there anything that you particularly liked or disliked about say the league schedule as a whole, or Hamilton's schedule in general, or like just what do you think?
Well, once again, the Ticats are starting on the road for the first four games or whatever it is, and same with the Argos. I guess that's the Pan Am games.
The Pan Am games affect there. Just I thought there might be a chance for maybe Hamilton to host week one and then go on the road. But, you know, to be fair, I think that I've always liked the Grey Cup rematch in the Winter Stadium week one. And we're getting that. So, you know, if that was a necessary give by the Cats, we're going to play in Calgary week one to set up as the rematch. So if they can't then play at home until August, that's fine with me. I really enjoy seeing that the two best teams from last season meet in the first week of the season.
Yeah, it really gets your blood flowing. You know, sometimes it's hard. I always get super excited for the first week of the CFL season, but it just creates an extra buzz. You know, Grey Cup rematch. I really like it too.
And if I'm not mistaken, it's the lone game on a Friday night, I think.
Yeah, I think Thursday night it's
Ottawa, Montreal. And then the Cats and Stamps alone to themselves. I just really like – I really enjoy the Grey Cup rematch. I think it's a great way to kick off the season. It's a great – you know, you get to sort of relive last year, as much as maybe you and I are not too fond of reliving how last year ended. Mm-hmm. And, you know, who knows? Like, Hamilton always seems to play fairly well in Calgary. Last year they lost in a defensive – a really huge defensive game. They lost by three. The year before, or 2 years before that, I believe they went in there and they lost. It was 2012 when the botched snap.
The snow game.
Yeah.
Guaranteed botched field goal, first game of the year.
Yeah, you're guaranteeing it?
Yeah, guaranteeing it.
Guaranteeing it. Okay, we're gonna have to come back to that. We'll remember that one.
Okay. Also with the schedule, interesting, the Fort Mac games, one preseason game, and then the home opener for the Argos. I guess they built a stadium in Fort Mac. I think it was like 5,000, and then they'll add about 10,000 seats to make it to 15,000 for the game. But a little touchdown Atlantic in northern Alberta, kind of.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I'm not like, I guess, yeah, I guess that, you know, that's a really good way to put it. When I first saw that, I was like, man, an Argo home game in Alberta when they're playing the Eskimos, that seems kind of silly. But if you put it in sort of that frame it in that way, yeah, I guess it kind of is like a little TD Atlantic prairie style. I do like the fact that they're taking games to different markets. I'm not sure I'd be keen on the Cats losing a home game now, especially before when, you know, Iverwind was, you know, getting torn down. They went out east, and so that was great. But no, I think any, you know, going to these markets where that never see professional sports, I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, I like it too. And the other thing is just Labor Day games are intact this year, and that's always a bonus.
I'm also big on the home opener being also on a holiday Monday, at least out here. I don't know where else in the country the first Monday of August is a holiday. I know it's like a, it's different in different places. The only thing I thought was weird about the Civic Holiday game was that it's being played at night. I guess not everyone gets the day off work, but it seems to me like even a 4 o'clock start would have been maybe better. It seems like 7 o'clock on a holiday Monday. It's just, I don't know. It's weird to me. I'm looking forward to it. I'm obviously going to go. I've been a season ticket holder for years, so it'll be nice to be hopefully in a completed stadium, as per what you were saying earlier. It's going to be done in April, so by August it definitely should be done.
You think?
That might be my only real gripe with the schedule, is that holiday Monday game being at night. There's obviously reasons for it, but I would have preferred maybe an afternoon kickoff. But again, I'm not going to complain too much. I'm going to get to go watch some live football, so.
I agree. It would have made more sense to put it during the afternoon, but what are you going to do?
Exactly. But that's the kickoff of, I think the Cats play something like six home games in 9 weeks or 8 weeks or something, starting with that game. Like almost all of August they're at home. I that's to me is going to be the. If they can go 2-2 or maybe even 1-3 in those first four road games, and then they get home, I think, because again they haven't lost to Tim Hortons Field yet, they're going to eventually. We both know this.
No.
They're never going to lose there ever.
Never.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. I'll take it. That's going to be a bit. If they can win six or seven games at home this year, I think obviously I think obviously they're a playoff team, but that to me that stretch of the season they're in, late summer, early fall, is going to be probably what decides the season for them with all those home games.
Yeah. I think they hopefully they go on a good run when they finally get home.
Maybe the only other dislike I have is I do see Ottawa as being a better team, so I'm not too keen on the Cats playing back to back to end the season with the Red Blacks. If they're not as good as I think they're going to be, then that could be two bang bang wins, roll into the playoffs on a high note. But I think Ottawa's going to be better. I could see that being maybe a little bit of a trip up. They get rid of the it's the last game against the Argos. The Friday after Labor Day, the Saturday after Labor Day. So those two games at the end of the season might be pretty big for the Cats and their playoff hopes.
Yeah, I could see that too. Is that the only two times we play Ottawa this year?
I believe so. I believe they
Yeah.
play Ottawa twice, Montreal three times, Toronto three
Oh,
times
yeah.
within the division. They do have to travel to Montreal twice, which is, as we know, they're not all that great playing at Molson Stadium. So that could be, it could be the fact that the Owls got two of those games at home as opposed to two of them being here. That could be the difference in who gets first place in the East.
Yeah. I'm pretty hyped for the East Division next year, actually. I think that I'm hoping that three teams from the East and three teams from the West make it into the playoffs for once and there's no crossover, but we shall see.
I would hope for the same thing. The only problem is there those teams in the West, I can't pick which one. I look at the teams and you look at, okay, Calgary and Edmonton seem like they should be locks for playoff spots. So then two of BC, Saskatchewan, and Winnipeg aren't going to make the playoffs, and BC's made the playoffs, I think, 18, 19 straight years, something like that.
Yeah.
Saskatchewan, when you think they're out of it, they find a way to bring back all those pieces and maybe even be a better team this year than they were last year. A healthy Durant might – it's going to definitely help them.
And Glenn, if Glenn's
there. Exactly. If they had Glenn last year when Durant went down, they don't go on that skid that they do that they go on. They still make the playoffs, obviously, but maybe they finish second in the West.
Glenn's not throwing four or five picks like Joseph did in the playoffs either.
Exactly. And then you have Winnipeg, who we already discussed, made all these changes in free agency and made all these huge moves to improve their team. I don't know. I can't pick. One of those teams is going to falter, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Edmonton that falters. Who knows? I don't see it, but anything's possible. Because at least one of those teams we know isn't making the playoffs. So,
yeah, it's really hard to pick, like to predict.
It truly is. Like,
if I had to, I would say BC, Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
But it's so tough.
Every time I talk myself into one of those teams, I talk myself out of them just as easily. You know what I mean? Like, there's just you have so much history there with them succeeding that I can't definitively state this team is going to not make the playoffs.
Too big to fail.
Too hard. Too hard. All right, so let's move into some Ticats news. This is a Ticats podcast, after all. Like, we're Ticat fans. Let's talk about what they did in free agency, what they got, what they lost, who they brought back. What do you got to say about that?
All I got to say is Brandon Banks. Yeah, baby. He's back, and you know what I love, Josh. You know what I love is we're bringing back our star players for the most part. You know what I mean? We're bringing them back. We're building a foundation, and it's just fabulous. You know, Banks, Hickman, Taylor Reed.
Tasker, who we talked about.
Tasker, we talked about. And they're signed, I mean, Banks, 3-year contract, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Tasker, 3-year contract.
Yep.
I'm not sure about Reed. I know Hickman signed a 1-year contract.
I think Reed only signed for one season. I think both those guys are doing the, well, we'll sign back. We're going to bank on ourselves. We're going to trust that we are going to play better. Although Reed playing better would be great. He was phenomenal last year. He was the team's rookie of the year nominee. So
look for him to have a big year next year, in my opinion.
Well, that linebacking core, as far as I'm concerned, is if not the best in the league, they are in the conversation. You got Lawrence on one side, Harris on the other side, and Reed manning the middle. It reminds me of the Jamal Johnson, Markieff Knowlton, Otis Floyd tandem that we had for a couple of seasons, except all these guys are much younger. So we have youth. These guys could grow. And I love watching linebackers play. I like watching hard-nosed defense. The Cats have a hard-nosed defense. There's not a move that they made that I can criticize. I wrote about it before. I really liked the re-signing of Antonio Coleman, who was kind of an under the radar signing because they re-signed him the same day they re-signed Taylor Reed, and now they have and I thought maybe that would mean Hickman's gone, but then Hickman comes back, so you're gonna have Norwood and Hickman and Coleman healthy, rotating in and out like that. To me, that's gonna cause nightmares. Add in all that talent that we have in the middle of the defensive line. With Laurent and Balky and Hall and Gaydosh, and
it's really a plethora of talent. I mean, that D line.
If you ask me, maybe I'm biased. I'm sure you're going to agree with me. That's the best defensive line in the league.
Oh yeah,
stop. They have. Okay, we'll take Coleman out because he hasn't really proven anything. But five of those guys, Norwood, Hickman, And the three guys in the middle, like, those are all-star caliber players. They are all
– has to go, eh? Like, somehow, like in a trade or something?
Well, I'm thinking at least of the Canadian defensive tackles. Yeah. I think that they could maybe part with one of them. But, again, you have Atkinson and Gaydosh who are on rookie deals, so they're probably not being paid all that much. You're not going to get rid of Laurent. He was the East Division's most outstanding Canadian last year. Balky's coming back from an injury, but prior to that, he's a glue guy. He's not someone you're going to get rid of.
Yep.
And you got to find a way to put Hall on the field, because as soon as he was inserted into the lineup last year, he was a machine. Like, I think
Gaydosh is the one to go, maybe, possibly.
That would be I would say yes, because I still think he wants to try the NFL.
Mm.
So if you can part with him, maybe trade him to a team out west. I believe he played at the University of Calgary, so maybe the Stamps could be looking for someone like that, Edmonton. But, yeah, you could maybe get something for him. But I think they're going to – if they don't find a trade partner and they don't get what they want, I think they're going to keep them all and just start – and rotate them and keep those guys fresh. Like,
yeah,
you can never have too much talent as far as I'm concerned. And right now this team has a lot of talent up front on the defensive line. And that's as far as I'm. That's not a bad thing. It's never a bad thing.
We have too many good players. They've really drafted well along the D line over the years, eh?
It certainly seems like it. But Balky was a free agent pickup. Laurent was a free agent pickup. So the starters are guys they brought in from elsewhere. But it's those depth guys: Gaydosh, Atkinson. Those are the guys that they found in the draft. Gaydosh was the first overall pick for a reason. Atkinson was a later round pick who might have gone higher had he not hurt his knee at Boise State. There's, you know, I really like what the Cats have up front.
Gable coming back till 2017 is phenomenal. Grigsby apparently going to re-sign, which I was a bit surprised at. But
I'm shocked, honestly, shocked.
I like that rotation a lot. If they're going to, you know, give Gable a two series and Grigsby comes in for one or whatever. I mean, they're similar type backs. They're strong runners. They block well. They catch out of the backfield well. Grigsby and Gable fit into Austin's / Condell's system really well. And I think our backfield is one of the best in the league right now.
Oh, that tandem is – we're talking about a 2013 All-Star and a 2014 All-Star. We're talking about Gable, who should have won the 2013 Rookie of the Year Award. Grigsby, it could have been in the conversation and might have won it or been a finalist for it had he played either the entire year with Winnipeg or the entire year with Hamilton. That tandem is going to be something else. And you throw in Moses Madu, who I really like.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a three-headed monster that I don't think any team can really touch. Edmonton's got a decent backfield combination with John White and Kendall Lawrence, but you get Gable back fully healthy, he's the starter. You get Grigsby, who I think the only thing Grigsby I think does better than Gable is he's more of a downhill runner. He's a lot stronger going between the tackles. Not that Gable's bad at it. I just think Grigsby's better at it. So he's your short yardage, your goal line back. I'm very excited at the possibilities of that offense. And again, it shows that these star players, these superstars, want to play here. Gable re-signed. Gable still has a year on his contract. He was still signed for this season. Yep. And he signed an extension to 2017. He's making the CFL – like, the CFL is going to be – he's not trying the NFL.
No, it's done now, I think.
He's going to be, I think, later 20s by the time that contract is up.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be looking at a 27, 28, 29-year-old running back in the NFL. He is now a CFL back, and I'm ecstatic that he is staying here.
Yeah, I'm overjoyed.
Throwing Grigsby? Maybe the running game's going to be a focal point this year.
Maybe. I mean, you know that Austin doesn't really like to run the ball a ton, but yeah, you never know. I mean, with that talent, you got to use them.
You got to give them the ball. You got to give them, like, when Grigsby was getting near 20 touches a game back at the end of the season, touchdowns he was making, back-to-back 93-yard games against the Owls in the season finale and the East Final. These guys can run the football. He has guys that can run the football. Gable had what did he have? 800, 900 rushing yards in 2013. So it's not that he's averse to running the football. He's now got the horses. If these guys stay healthy, he's got the guys that he can pound the ball in, pound the ball in, pound the ball in. I'm very excited to see what those guys are going to do this season.
Me too. And it's all, you almost forget how good Gable was in 2013 because he was injured almost all last year. So
yeah, I think he played something like six games in 2014. But yeah, he was on the cusp of being in the conversation of the best running backs in the game. So maybe if he can keep the injuries off him, I'm excited. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too, man. But I worry about the shoulder injury a bit because, you know, you land on that wrong and it's going to pop out. But we shall see. Want to get to the losses now?
Sure. Okay, so look, they lost a fair amount of players. Not a ton. I think Jaeger was maybe the biggest loss they suffered. But they replaced him with Spencer Watt, so I can't really be too upset about that. I would have liked to have seen Jaeger back. I think given a bigger role, he can produce more than what he has. I think we've seen that when Fantuz gets injured, Jaeger comes in. He plays pretty well. But yeah, I'm not really all that up in arms over any of the guys that signed elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm not that concerned either. Grant's still out there. I don't know what his deal is. It's been pretty. I mean, he's said some things on Twitter that have been interesting, but it's just I don't know if they're still talking or what's the deal with that. And Dan LeFevre is could be a valuable backup on any CFL team, I think, even though he's coming off that bad knee injury. I just like how this guy plays, and he's an athletic dude. I think he's a smart dude. He can read the defense pretty well. And, you know, they get criticized for not the strongest arm, but I didn't really have a problem with his arm. I mean, he made some long passes when he was in there. So I just think that I kind of thought that Saskatchewan was going to go after him, maybe BC, but that hasn't developed yet. So I'm not sure where he's going to end up, but I think he will end up somewhere eventually.
Oh, for sure. I think the arm strength thing is overblown, mostly because I see this offense that he was in doesn't really take advantage of the deep threat. It's not like Caleros was throwing bombs every time he was out there. It was more of a quick release, make your read, quick release, get in the hands of your playmakers and let them make plays. That's why Brandon Banks was so special last year. It was get the ball in his hands and let him make people miss. That's what he does. So I think maybe it's not so much that LeFevre can't throw deep. It's that he just wasn't asked to throw deep. Same with Caleros. It's not like he can't throw deep. No one ever questions Caleros' arm strength.
Mm-hmm.
But how many times did you see him throw the ball 30, 40, 50 yards downfield? Like I'm sure it happens because it always does. He had a big touchdown pass to Banks in the Grey Cup. But it's not like that's not just not a part of their offense. It's much more of a quick release and let's get the ball in Tasker's hands, get it in Banks' hands, get it in Fantuz's hands, get it in one of the running back's hands and let them make a guy miss, and then that's how you get the big plays. At least that's what I see.
Yeah, I don't know where that criticism comes from with LeFevre, but you're right. We're not airing it out every play. We're not, you know, Matt Dunnigan in the 90s type offense. But yeah, I do like LeFevre a lot, and he will end up somewhere.
For sure. And you talked about Grant earlier, and
he'll end up somewhere too. He's just too good.
I've been a big fan of his. He doesn't miss that final game in 2013 against Winnipeg where they sat him because they had already clinched a playoff spot. They were second place. They weren't moving up or down. He would have had a 1,000-yard season. Maybe it's sentiment. He was the guy that scored the first touchdown in the new stadium. He's been with the team since, I believe, 2011. So he's been here for good years and bad years. Maybe it's more of the, as a fan, I want to see him come back because I think they can win the Grey Cup, and it would be nice for a guy who has been here for a long time to finally to taste the sweet taste of victory with the team that brought him in. I just don't know if he's coming back.
Really made him a fan favorite was when he wore that Argos suck shirt at the East Final a couple years ago in Toronto.
Yeah, that was definitely one of those things. And honestly, and I wrote about this in the first mailbag post that I made a couple last week. I was asked why hasn't Grant signed with anyone, and I don't know the man, but I honestly think that he really took to Hamilton, and I think the Argos are going after him, and I think he's got a hard decision to make. I don't think he wants to play there. No, none of the other players grabbed Argos sucks t-shirts. He did. I think he really, truly, in his heart, is like, he doesn't know if he can make the move.
I have a feeling it's all about money in Hamilton. I have a feeling that he really wants to be back as a Ticat, but they might not be seeing, you know, the same type of contract that he wants. So I think it's all about money, and the Argos might throw a bit more cash at him and maybe he'll go there. But you're right. I think he really wants to be a Ticat.
And you know what? It's just I would have said – there's no way that he's coming back, but I would have said the same about Nick Grigsby. And lo and behold, yesterday pops up that he will be re-signing. So there's money there, I'm assuming. So maybe it's one of those things where he feels the offers and then he comes back and says, I don't know. I could see him back just because of things I've said. This guy's not coming back. And then, oh, holy crap, he's back. So
yeah.
I hope he's back. I want him back. I think he'd be a great asset to that receiving core, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Yes, sir. You want to get into the questions now, buddy?
Is it question time?
It's question time.
All right, let's get these questions in.
All right, Oski Eddie, our good friend Oski Eddie, wants to know, what positions do the Ticats need help with, and what free agents unsigned would you choose?
I still think they need help in the back end of that defensive secondary. I think, again, the loss of Delvin Bro, which we've covered previously, is something that's going to be tough for the team, not trying to find a replacement for him. So I think the secondary is where they still need help. As far as free agents, honestly, I don't think there are any out there that are a definitive, this guy comes in, we plug him in, he starts, he's fine.
I agree.
I think the time for signing other free agents is probably over. So now we're looking at tryout camps and rookie signing contracts that step in. Like Delvin Bro 2 years ago was someone no one had any idea who he was, comes in, all-star player.
Yeah,
I think that's where we're going to find.
He didn't even play college football, so like
exactly.
Total unknown.
Yeah, so I think that's where we find guys to plug in on – in the position areas where I think they need more help.
Yep. Get some guys in here on rookie contracts, get them a little cheaper. And, you know, I'd like to see, I feel the same way about the halfback position as you. I don't see any free agent out there that catches my eye. You know, we've been hit with the receivers a bit. I wouldn't mind seeing Aaron Kelly back in black and gold. But even that, you know, I could see both the halfback position on defense and receivers being unknown guys, like you said. So, you know, that's a tough one with all the money free agents seem to be signed up. So I could see both those positions being unknowns next year.
Absolutely.
All right. Question number two. That is from our buddy Fender Guy 69. One player you could pick from any other CFL team for this season for Ticats, for the Ticats. No cap or roster repercussions?
Ooh, this is a good one. This is tough.
Yeah, I had a tough time with this one too.
The gut reaction is to go with a quarterback because that's the most important player on the team. But as much as I don't think Zach Caleros is the best quarterback in the CFL, I'm not too keen on switching him out. So I'm not going to go quarterback. John Cornish, I think, is the best player in the league, but at the same time, is bringing him in over like CJ Gable and Nick Grigsby, is that it's not a huge jump. Yes, the ratio helps and all that stuff, but the one area I think the team still needs a playmaker is in the receiving core. So my one guy is going to be Emmanuel Arsenault from BC. I think a player like that, a bona fide number one receiver who can stretch the field, is something that this team does not have, and I think it would add to the offense. So for 1 year, one player, no worries about anything, I'm taking Manny Arsenault.
I like that. I like that. For me, now I talked about it on the first podcast, I really wanted Stanley Bryant as a Ticat, and I know, you know, the ratio and all that, and that's probably one of the reasons that they couldn't get him. But I would really like to bring him in, put him at left tackle, you know, really solidify that offensive line. And if I had to go with like a talent position, I would like to bring in Bowman from Edmonton. Even though he has some dropsies at times, when he's on, he is on and he's dominant, and he would be a great addition to the receiving core of the Ticats. All right. All Kinds of Clay wants to know, what does Max Million move to CFL mean for the Argos and CFL social media game?
Okay, so this is the guy that runs the Argos Twitter account, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
Yeah, see, maybe I'm just a crotchety old man, but I never found any of the stuff that they did to be all that funny, all that engaging. Just yesterday, they came up with this idea. Oh, you know, it's Monday. The Oscars were yesterday. We're going to do this CFL Oscars thing. And I actually tweeted back at them like, guys, fans did this last night. Fans were doing this while the Oscars were on. Now you're essentially stealing their idea, not giving them credit. I guess it means that the CFL Twitter feed and Facebook stuff is going to be more like the Argos ones. I'm not looking forward to that. I have a sense of humor, but I just never found any of the stuff they did to be all that hilarious. I thought it was just kind of silly and pointless.
Yeah, I'll just say that there's going to be a lot of memes, I guess, coming from the CFL Twitter account now. And that's all I have to say about that. Okay, Rob G86 wants to know, what's the deal with the 2016 Grey Cup? Usually host has been announced by now, no?
Yeah, good. That's a good question. I got to think, what was it, about a month and a half ago or so, that John Tory came out and said that he thought that the 2016 Grey Cup was going to be in Toronto. Mm. I'm thinking they're still working on something there. I think that's the reason for the lack of an announcement. As I've said, I may have said it on the podcast, I may have written it. I don't always remember when I do things because I'm getting old. Mm-hmm. But I think if Hamilton doesn't host in 2016, then Hamilton will host in 2018. I think 2017 has to be the year that it's in Ottawa. It just makes too much sense. So maybe they're working out, because with the Sky Dome apparently getting grass, with the Argos having to be out of there by 2017 – 2016 could be the last time they could do a Grey Cup there. So I could see the hang-up being, do we go to Hamilton in 2016 or do we make one last run at the Sky Dome? So I think that gets settled. Maybe it gets settled when Braley gets the deal with BMO Field. Obviously, they have to announce it pretty soon because it does seem to be pretty late in the game for them not to have announced where it's going to be.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I think, you know, for a long time I thought it was going to be Hamilton 2016, but I just think with the stadium going how it went, and I just think that Toronto is going to get the 2016 Grey Cup. And either way, I mean, it's so close to Hamilton, so
Yeah, it's fine by me. I'll
yeah.
probably end up going. But yeah, I guess we're kind of in agreement on this. It's got to be the hang up and seeing if they can get it into the dome.
Yeah. All right. Spitzko wants to know, is it true that when bad people die, they go to hell and are forced to be Ticat fans?
Oh, I figured that when bad people die, they just have to sit and watch the Argos play at the Sky Dome.
Yeah. I agree.
I
Take
have a
off.
question for you, actually.
Okay. Shoot, shoot.
Well, it's for both of us, I guess. Any road trips planned for this year? Obviously, with you living in PEI, every game you go to is a road trip.
Yeah. I
Any
have to
idea?
come. I have to come up for. I have to be in that new stadium once, at least once this season. So, it just has to happen for me. I just want to. Everyone Stadium was so close to my heart, and now it's gone. And I was at the last Labor Day game in Irvine Stadium, so that was pretty special to me. But yeah, I gotta get up there and see the new stadium. It's just an absolute must for me.
I obviously go to the stadium every time they play there, so that's not much of a road trip. I also usually go to the Toronto games again because it's so close. It's not much of a road trip either. I am in the process of deciding whether to go to Montreal in July,
Ooh, you ever
or
been to a game in Montreal?
I have been to a game in Montreal. I went, but I think it was 2010. They played an early season game and got absolutely hammered. But I've been to a game in Montreal and. And if I decide to go there, then that's going to be my trip. If I decide I've been to Montreal already, it could be November 7th. I finally get to see a game in Ottawa. I've never been to a game in Ottawa. When I was when they had the Renegades, I was in school and didn't really have a chance to go to many games. When I was even younger, it's not like we weren't flush with cash, so my dad wasn't we weren't taking a lot of trips, so never got a chance to go to Old Frank Clair Stadium. I'm a big fan of the city of Ottawa. I was there last summer. I just love everything about it. So I think that's if that game was in the summer, it would have been a no-brainer. With it being last game of the season, November weather in Ottawa is not always the greatest, but it's a debate between those two. It's whether I go to Ottawa in November or Montreal in July.
Yeah, I went there. I went to one game in Ottawa when the Renegades were around. Me and my dad went to did like a weekend thing. He went to Montreal game. Montreal and Winnipeg were playing. And this was years ago, and then Ottawa, Hamilton. And it was a great time, and I'd like to see how that stadium looks now with the renovations and all that. So that would be pretty cool. All right, Major League CFL wants to know if you and Josh were in a full-on battle royal, how would you cheat to ensure your win?
Would I have to cheat to beat you?
Probably not. I'm a pretty tiny dude.
Now, Battle Royal. Are we talking like WWE style over the top rope, or are we talking like Mortal Kombat style fisticuffs?
I was thinking more like a Royal Rumble type sitch.
Okay, well, I would either hide out underneath the ring the entire time and
Please.
wait until you're the last one standing, then come in and take you out from behind with a steel
Oh, that's
chair.
Stone. You know, you Stone Cold Steve Austin over here.
Exactly, toss you out. I would just hide and cower and be a coward and just wait until everyone else did all the dirty work and then just come and toss you out at the end to win the whole damn thing.
Well, I would bite. Do some crotch. I do some crotch stuff. Poke eyes and foreign objects to ensure my victory. That was a good question. I like that. That was fun.
That was
But
fun.
USFL Tecmo wants to know, how did you both become Ticat fans? Was location only reason, or were there other influences?
It was pretty much location for me. Born here, raised here. It wasn't really much of an option to cheer for another team. Odd thing being, however, that when I went to my first game, I wrote about this a few years ago when everyone was getting torn down. I was writing about things I'd done at the stadium, memories I'd had. So yeah, I went to my first game at Iverwind Stadium. They're playing the Lions. I was 5, 6, or 7 years old. I don't really remember. I think it was 88, but I can't really recall. And there was a guy in the stands waving a BC Lions flag, and I asked my dad, like, why does everyone not like this guy? And he was like, oh, because, like, Hamilton's this – like, he gave me the whole reason why. And I said, well, I feel bad for that guy. He's all by himself. I'm going to cheer with that guy. So the very first game I ever went to, I actually cheered for the BC Lions, which is really weird.
Shame.
And there was a small – 1991, I didn't like the Argos, but I was a huge Rocket Ismail fan. So I really enjoyed watching him play. So there have been sort of like lapses, not necessarily lapses in fandom, because like I was never ever cheer for the Argos. But yeah, I guess to answer the question, it really was just location, location, location.
Well, for me, I was kind of born into it. I mean, my dad was a huge Ticats fan. I think my parents had season tickets in the 70s before I was born. Or early 80s. But we lived about 3 hours away from Hamilton in Port Elgin, Ontario, and he had season tickets when I was younger, so I would go to games, and that's pretty much it. I mean, sometimes CFL fans, you have to be born into it, you know what I mean, to really get into it. And that was the case with me. It would make the drive down, and it was fantastic, and I'm really happy that I was born into it, because it's a great little fraternity.
Yeah, see, I wasn't born into it. My dad wasn't a huge football fan. He actually says that it was me getting into football that sort of got him back into it.
Mm-hmm.
He said when he was younger, he lived in Toronto, he lived in Scarborough. But never really liked the Argos. He liked them like 71 with Joe Theismann, because like my dad's a big Notre Dame football fan, so Notre Dame player, like Theismann was Notre Dame quarterback, came to the Argos. He liked them then, but he said even when he was younger, he always cheered for the Cats, which is really weird from a guy who grew up in Scarborough. Mm-hmm. But then as he got older, he kind of got out of it. And then I started watching the NFL and the CFL. I don't really know what came first, to be honest with you. I know it happened around the same time. So yeah, I kind of got him into it, which is kind of weird. Or at least back into it, I guess. So I don't really, maybe I just knew who the good guys always were. And I was just like, well, these are the good guys. So you got to cheer for the good guys, right?
Exactly. Great taste.
Any more questions? Is that it?
That's it, buddy.
So I guess we're done here then, eh? To everyone out there, don't forget you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. We're on there now. You can also download it off the blog itself. So for this episode of Podski Wee Wee, I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Eat them raw.